Okay, it's good to be here. Good to see you all. And I'm here today to teach you about math, and it's about percentages, to be more precise. Now, I'm not quite sure why I was assigned this particular talk.
You're a good teacher. Manner up.
His fault.
Really, you all need to be to the front. I'll let Aaron worry about that. But next time,
move forward.
I think it was his fault that I was assigned percentages. And when I was assigned this talk of percentages, how to find these correct percentages, I have to be real honest with you, I didn't know how to do it myself, right? I taught 4th and 5th grade, and we didn't really do too much of that. And so I went to the library and checked out a big stack of books, and I read them, or most of them. And now I have a pretty good system that I came up with for doing these percents. And I thought I'd made it up, and I thought originated with me, but when I showed it to my sister, my older sister, she said, oh, that's just like my teacher taught me in school, so I don't know, it might not be that. So first off, percents and how to solve them. What is a percent? A percent looks a little bit like this. But if you look really close, it's kind of a garbled up 100. You can rearrange it and it's, you know, more or less a percent. And a percent means a piece, a part of 100. So if you have a pie with 100 pieces and you eat 35 of those pieces, you just ate 35% of your pie. Percents are really simple in that form. So if I had a pie of 100 pieces and if I ate 35 pieces and that's 35% of my pie, if I ate 75 pieces, how many percent of my pie would that be? Well, 75%, right? How about if I ate 100 pieces of my pie? It'd be the whole pie, right? There's only 100 pieces, so I ate 100% of my pie. Now, how about if I ate 120 pieces of pie? Well, that's more than a whole pie. That's a pie in another part. But you can still say that as a percent. You can say 100 and... Yeah, if you give everybody two, that'd be great. And so you're actually at 120% of the pie. So what we're going to do, you're going to get these papers, and I'm going to write this down. So let's say we have 100 pieces of pie. That's our whole pie. We have 15 pieces eaten, and we could say 15 is 15% of our whole of 100 pieces in your pie. So we can change these numbers to anything we want. This is the part. This is the percent. And this is the whole. And you can actually change this number. You can change all the different numbers. But in every percentage problem that you're going to have, that is going to be in your story problems, that you're going to be teaching your students, are going to have these three parts into it. There's going to be a part, there's going to be a percentage, and there's going to be a whole. And when you have a problem is when you're missing one of those. We have maybe... See, you can this doesn't have to be 100. This could be something like a normal pie. Like, say, 8 pieces. And let's say we ate 3 of those 8 pieces. 3 is the part we ate. We have 3 pieces of the whole pie, but we don't know the percent. We're missing this part. So what I'm going to teach you today, 3 is what percent of the whole pie? This is a question mark, by the way. So what I'm going to teach you today is how to solve these when we're missing the different pieces. And it's super, super simple. If you look at the paper that I gave you, I think you all have one now, you have this up here, percents and how to solve them. You have below that you have 15 is 15% of 100, and you see they're labeled part, percent, and whole. And then below it has the three types of problems that you're going to be teaching your students. You're going to have one problem is what number is 20% of 50? That's one problem, and if you look right across from it, that's the little equation that you use to solve it. The next one is 10 is 20% of what number? And across from that, again, is the little equation of how to solve it. The third one is 10 is what percent of 50? And again, it has a little equation. So what we're going to do is we're going to, whenever we have a story problem, we are going to try to find these three components, the part and the percent and the whole. And then with those three components, or there's actually only going to be two if there's a story problem, because you're missing one, that's what you're solving, you're going to fill in what you don't have here. Like, let's say we have our percent and our whole, that would be the top one, 20% of the whole number, which is 50. Very, very simple. So one thing, a percent, you can't use a percent in a, when you're doing a math problem, you can't multiply a percent times something as a percent or divide it as a percent. You have to change it to a decimal. So any percent, let's say we have 28%, to change it into a decimal, you just move a decimal point from here, where it always is on a whole number, you move it over to here. So you have, instead of 28%, you have 28 hundredths, which is what a percent is. If we have 128%, remember that's more than a whole pie, it's 128 pieces, there's only 100 pieces in our pie, we still move the decimal point only two places, and we have 1 and 28 pieces of the pie. So, and once we change it into a percentage, we can use, we can multiply, we can divide, we can do what needs to be done. So if you look on your story problems, we have, on the first story problem, and in teaching these story problems, when you're teaching your students, you must teach them this process. You know, many of you could look at these and tell me what the percentages are, and some of your students can too, but don't let them do that. Teach them the process of finding them and show them how to find it, and I'll tell you how to do that. So we have the first story problem here. We have some fishing people. Could you read it to us, the story problem?
Sure. It was a wonderful day to go fishing. 56 fishermen went fishing in the lake. Only 25% caught any fish. How many fishermen caught fish?
Okay. And when you're teaching your students, have them read. I would say have them do this at the class table, if when they're learning, and have them read the problem, and then write down this little. Put a blank, and then put an is, and then put a blank, and put an of, and then put a blank. We have our part, and teach them how to do this. Teach them how to think this way when they're approaching a percentage problem. This is always going to be our part. It's going to be the part we're talking about. How many pieces of the pie, how many, it's not the total, it's the part. Here's the percent, and here is the whole number, the original number. How many fish were caught, how many pieces were in the whole pie, how many people were at the whole meeting, that's the original number. So what do we have here? We have two numbers in here. We have 56 fishermen and we have 25%. Where would we put these? What are 56 fishermen be? Actually, the whole. So we have our 56 goes here, and obviously our percent is pretty easy. If it has a percent sign, it's going to probably go right over the percent spot. So that is going to be 25%. And so then we have, these papers are repeated on the top, on the bottom. It's the same on the bottom as it is on the top. And if I were you, I would cut them in half. And if you don't really have a plan for teaching percents, I would give your students each one of these papers and let them keep it in their desk to use it to help them organize the way they think and the way they do percents. So now we have the top little problem here. We have what number? We don't have this number. We don't have a part. We have what number is 25% of 56. And if you look right here, the answer to solve that equation, we have 2/10 because we moved that decimal over. Well, here, we'll just do it on this one. We have to change this to a decimal. 25%. We change it to a decimal, we move that place 2 over, and all of a sudden we have 25%, 25 hundredths. And our thing says we should multiply that by our whole. Our little, so 25 times 56. And we're all teachers. Maybe we don't even need to do this problem. Yes?
I would have just gone 25 to the fourth, so I would have just divided 4 and divided 6.
You're right. You're right. But don't you dare teach your students to do that.
I'm a mom. I just needed to know this for myself because I had trouble.
You know what? You know what? You're absolutely true. And mental math is good. That's another, and it's very good. And you're actually probably, to tell you the honest truth, when you enter real life, you probably won't do this. You'll probably do mental math, even if you have 27% of them.
But I still needed to know how to do this because sometimes there are situations that I need to know, and I'm just like, I don't know how to find the missing numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're absolutely right. But 25% is easy. And you're going to have some students as you're teaching, and they're going to be smart students, and they're going to know right away, oh, I need to just divide it by 4. That's really simple. And they're going to do the first 5 lessons of story problems, and they're going to get them all right, and you're going to think, wow, we did it, you know. But then it gets more complicated. They go on to the next room, and all of a sudden they're dealing with really complicated percents, and they have no idea. They're exactly in the same shoes as I was at 25 years old, or 26, whenever it was, when I was assigned this talk, and I had no clue how to do percents. Right, I'm trying to save you all that terrible pain. You know, it was deep stuff. So you would just multiply this. I'll just do it very quickly. 30 and 11. If I do it wrong, just tell me. My students took great delight in when I did it wrong. Okay? And since we have two decimals in our top numbers there, we do it down here. So we have 14. 14 is our answer. 14 would go right here. 14 is 25% of 56, right? We solved it. We're one delightful success story. Now, do you have... what I want to tell you here, really, I'll tell you something really quick, and if you have any questions, ask them, and then we're going to go on and do some more story problems. When you are teaching your students math, and to a little fifth grade girl or fourth grade girl or boy, but it seems like girls especially, it seems like they really, really panic in the face of a story problem, right? And what you have to do is you have to give them, so if it's a story problem with percentages in it, you have to give them simple little steps to start. Your steps are these. You write your little lines. You write 3 lines. Well, blank is blank, like this. And then if you have a percent, you change it into a... And then you put your missing numbers into the right spots. And if you have a percent, you change it into a decimal. And then you look on your little paper, and you figure out which one you're supposed to do. And then you do the fact. And you're here to help your students learn. You're here to help your students learn. And so I would say give them this paper and let them use it because as they look at this paper and as they will learn it, it will be in their head and they will be able to do percentages hopefully until they die at 95. Okay, so little steps. When you're teaching any math concept and where the concept meets the road is in your story problems, give them little steps to help them solve those story problems. Do you have any thoughts or questions right now before we move to more story problems? Good. Oh, did you have one?
Just an idea. You can see that class. You're using a visual. We use yardstick, or actually meter stick, because it has 100 feet. And it worked really, really well. We wore them all from all the classrooms, and the whole yard meter stick.
And that's a very good idea. That is 100. You have 100 centimeters in your, and that represents your total of 100. You have to get in your student's head the concept that a percent is telling you a part of 100. Your whole number, no matter what it is, represents 100. Even if it's only 8 pieces in pi, it represents 100% of the pi. And you're using these little math deals to And so to have something visual like that, I'd say if you could have a yardstick with 100 things on it, I mean a meter stick, or you could bake a massive pie with 100 pieces, that might be really effective. I mean, for me, I think that would have been, you know, really effective to really get that fixed in my mind. So do something like that visually to help your students. Anything else? Second story problem we have. Would you read that for us, Face?
My sister teaches in a school with 105 students in it. 35 of these students are girls. What percentage of girls attend school?
Very good. And so will you tell me, in our little deal here, what numbers we have and what we don't have?
105 is the whole.
105 is the whole.
And 35 is the part.
And 35 is the part. Okay, now, looking at your problem, I mean, at your little cheat sheet here, what would you do with this scenario? We have the part, we have the whole, but we don't have the percent. What?
So you would, okay, it's the bottom one.
Yep, it's the bottom one, you're right.
So you would divide 35 by 105.
Exactly. You would divide 35, you divide it by 105, right? Now you can go like this to do a division. See this you might not actually get into in 5th and 6th grade? Yeah?
Is it okay to let them read?
Absolutely. And you know what? If that's the way you teach it, that is just great. For me, and this is just my mental mind block, but whenever you put two numbers on top of each other in fraction form, it gets really, really shaky, especially if they're big numbers. Now, I know you can reduce them, and it all works out, and we can do that here. You know, it's a simple, it's 5. And if we want to do that, we can. Actually, we're just going to leave it. It should. Well, you're going to go like this. Did you do the problem? These are actually made up by me, these story problems, and I didn't actually solve them all. And the theory is correct, but if your problem doesn't come out, then you're just going to have to round it. I mean, many. So what did you get?
Well, it comes to 33, but then you just keep going because...
Okay, that's 33. That's a third, and it's continuing. And in math, you would just go like this. So what were the first numbers here?
33.
It starts with 33? Mm-hmm. So we're going to go be like this?
Mm-hmm.
More or less? Okay, so what we're going to do, this is a decimal. We're going to change it back into... We're trying to find the percent, so we're going to change it back into percent. So we're just going to round to the nearest whole percent, which is going to be... 33%. Right? And they're going to have math problems like this. See, this is why you teach them the system. You teach them this little theory because they're not going to be able to go... Well, actually, this one you would be able to go a third of it. Divide it by 3. But you need to... It just gets more complicated if you don't know an actual step. 1, 2, 3, do this, the next thing until you get to the... So we have the... Any questions on that one? Do we understand how that works?
I was thinking that you could make an exact percent by saying 33 1/3%.
That's true. And that would get rid of your irrational 3 here. That is true because 333 means... Oh, see what I'm saying about percent? 33 1/3%, and that is very correct. Yes?
If you reduce it, it's going to come out...
It'll come out to the exact same number. No. It could, well, here, let's do it. 105 No, other way around. Because we have 7 and we have 21. And then we have 1 and we have 3. So we have a third, which a third means 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, do the next one. Ron, would you read the third one for us here?
There was a great sale on fishing lures and tobacco. Instead of three lures, there was normally $12 and 85% off. What is the sale price of the lure?
Okay, so what do we have to fill in our blanks here? Do we have a park?
Kind of.
12, okay.
Because you have three lures.
Okay.
The sale price is lure. So what are you asking?
Oh, good point. Three lures. Good point. It was supposed to be lures on the end there, because I have students that go through the story problem, and I don't think that they ever really read the story problem, which I should have written it correctly if I was going to do this. But they just look for the numbers, right? Here's a 12, here's a 3, here's a 2. And then how do we kind of juggle these numbers to make it work? And they don't ask you how to do the story problem. They say, Mr. Do you divide? Do you add? I'm like, who read the problem? But that's what I was trying to do with this extra 3 in there. So just in your mind here, or with your pen if you're really, it has to be right, put a little S on the lures there. What was the sale price of the lures? I meant the pack of the lure. So that little 3 lures in the pack, that's just to throw off these students that, which is maybe kind of cheating. But so we have, it was normally $12 and it was 85% off. What two numbers do we have there? Do we have an original? We have the whole. Yep. $85. Okay. And it's often good to start with that. If you look right underneath here, I have the little sentences. Ask yourself, identify the whole, identify the part, identify the percent. And start with the whole. See if you can find that original number, like Ron did. So we have 12. That's our original. And we have a percentage. And how do we solve that? Which equation do we have here of the 3? Let me see. Cullen. Oh.
I'm trying to figure this out because 85% off. Well, then you're going to have to do the percent. 15%.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you something else. Before you teach them that, teach them this. Teach them to take it off and then subtract it. Right? Have them take the percentage off and then subtract it. And then maybe, 3 lessons later, teach them how to do what you're saying. To subtract the percent and then multiply it by the subtracted percent. Okay, that saves a step. But I want to tell you something. If you're teaching math to people whose minds maybe aren't very good at math, like, say, my mind, we get really confused with too many new things. And so if you teach me first how to just multiply this percentage, and I know this, and then this is the amount off, and I could subtract it, well then, if you tell me tomorrow, to subtract the percentage, then my mind is now ready to absorb it, right? So, I mean, you smart people think about us dumb people, right? But saying that, if I'm the teacher and you're the student, do it your way right now. If you know that and it's making sense to you right now, go ahead and do it. But I'm not going to teach it to me at this point yet. We're going to give it another day or two. Does that make sense? Kind of. Okay, so what process are we going to do here? We're going to follow one of these little...
The first one.
Back to the first one. And so we're going to go, what are we going to do? What's the problem going to look like? We can't multiply percent. We're going to have to
change it to 0.85
times 12. We're not going to do that problem, right? 0.85 times 12, 85 hundredths, right? Percentage times 12. So, another great success story. Good job. Now, I would do this problem in class if it was with my students. And if it was the first day that we're doing percents, I would make sure every one of those students would do a problem in class doing this little system before we went on. Okay, we have the fourth one down. Let me see. Rachel.
That table's so long. That's really cheap.
Yeah, I know. I know. See? Okay, if you do make problems for your students, I didn't do such a good job here, but like the CLE Math does, their story problems are set in other countries and other places with other people's money and other people's things. And so while you're reading these story problems, you're getting kind of this little peek into another way of thinking, another something that you can be interested in. Try to teach just as many, through as many facets to your students as you can. And if you make story problems, we'll do that. And if they're really like fishing, maybe you could throw in some fishing lure ones. Okay, we have the next one. Rachel, will you read this for us?
And then, the $3 for the waitress that spreads fried fish, her favorite restaurant. This was 15 percent of her bill. How much was going to be 34 sheets?
All right, very good. Do we have a hole? Identify the hole? No. What? Do we have a part?
Yes, three.
Three? And do we have a percent?
15.
You know what? You're going to do this in math in school, but it's actually going to be pretty rare when you're going to do this in real life, this particular problem. There are times, but it's rarer. In my particular life. So what do we do with our problem here? Which one is it? One, two, or first, second, or third one? Second one. So what do we do? We do the part divided by the percent. Very good. So we have 3, and it's divided by 15%. Now, can we just do 15% here? No? That's right. 15 hundredths, and you can't do a division problem like this. You can't have a decimal in your divisor, or divisor?
Yeah.
Is this the divisor?
Yeah.
Okay. Just my math again. So you have two places here, you're going to add two places in your dividend and have a new decimal. You might not teach these to fourth graders yet. This is going to get into more complicated math later. And then you do this division problem, and it will come out correctly. Even I can see that it is 20%. I think. No, 20. Their full bill is 20. We're in shape. You can tell I'm not a math teacher. I teach English. Okay, our next story problem. See, I'll tell you a little something. When you're teaching something in school, you have the subject you're supposed to teach, and then you have the subject that you really want to teach. Right? You have those two options, right? Well, sometimes if you can work really fast and get through the subject that you have to teach, and you want to teach it right because you're tired to teach the subject, and then you have a little bit of time left over, then you're allowed to teach the subject that you want to teach. And your goal as a teacher is to teach your student how to live a life for God and to live a full life for God. And I think every time that you can, if you're doing percentages and you're just the best math teacher in the world and you teach them percentages, and it only takes part of your math class, every situation is different, but be careful about just assigning the next math lesson. Maybe think of figuring out a way to teach them or tell them or show them, I don't know, something that you're passionate about. But maybe if you're really passionate about math, it would be that. So, next story problem. Oh, do we understand this one? Good with that? Mary Miller, would you read the next one for us?
Ezekiel and Frederick mowed yards for a living. Last week they did 40 different yards, but only got a little 10 of them. What percentage of this did Ezekiel and Frederick take?
Okay, so what numbers do we have? Do we have a whole?
40.
Do we have a part? And we don't have a percent, because if we'd have a percent, our problem would be solved. All right? And so which one of these process is it going to be? Third one.
The last one.
And so what do we do?
10 divided by 40.
Yep, we divide part by the whole. We're going to add zeros. There's going to be a percentage here. 40. Should we do this problem? Maybe really quick. 40 times 2. Mm-hmm. 25%. Or 25 hundredths, and we changed it to a percent. 25%. Good enough?
I think I probably confused my students a lot by doing that would have been so easy one for.
I know. But okay. Now saying that, when they're older and they're running their lawn care business, they're not going to do this on a simple one like this. They're going to do four into, I mean, seriously, like what is a quarter of 40? I mean, that's as bad as, but they're not going to do that on a complex one. So what you're teaching them now with simple problems that it's easy for them to see the process, you're teaching them how to do the process. Because teaching math is teaching the process to arrive there. The answer, you know what? These answers can be wrong. These answers have absolutely no real life significance for me right now. I could get every one of these wrong and it wouldn't matter. But the process is what we're learning, and that's what we're taking. That's what your fifth grader, your 10th grader, your 50-year-old husband, your whoever, that is what they are taking with them through their lives. Okay, any thoughts on this? Let's go to the last story problem. I think we're the last one. Yeah. Let me see. I'm trying to see all your name tags. Jan Steiner. Would you read the last one for us?
Andrew and her class are collecting bugs for bug collection. A 15% increase in bugs collected this week resulted in 30 more bugs from last week. How many bugs have the children collected in the previous week?
Very good. Do we have a whole?
No.
Do we have a percent?
15%.
And do we have a par?
30.
And what is going to be our process?
It's
the second one. And so we are going to do what? What's our problem going to look like?
30 divided by
6.15. 30? Divided by 0.15. And since we can't have it in our divisor, we're going to move it over two places. Oops, not there. Here. Wait. Yes. I get very easily confused with math. And so we have 200. 30 is 15% of 200. Now, did you understand that? Did I go too fast? Huh? Oh, good point. Oh, how many bugs had the children collected the previous week? Let me think here. Hold on just a moment while I process this. 30 more bugs than last week. How many bugs had the children collected in the previous week? Does it? Help me here, guys. No? How many did they? Yeah, no, it would be. Listen, hold on. 200 was last week. 15% more this week is 30 more. This week we have 230. Last week we had 200. Is that right? I just made a wild shot. And I tell you, if you aren't very good, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking of my dad was really good at math, and he said, he actually thought it was easier to teach English, which he was not good at, because he had patience so the people didn't understand. Whereas math, he's like, it's so simple, just get it already. You know. So maybe you should be a math teacher.
Okay, now you know what? That is a nugget of wisdom that you... Now, I don't want to be a math teacher, but that being said, that is something that we can take home with us today. Because if you're good at something... You have to give grace to the people that aren't. And you know what? If you're not good at something, It's all right if your students know it. It is not the end of the world if they know that you're not good at math. And in fact, they might even perform a little better. But if you aren't good at math and you know it, and you make mistakes, and then you try to bulldoze your way that I'm the teacher and I don't make mistakes. You know, I had a teacher like that one time. Not smart. Not smart. Okay, do you have any questions on this particular math conundrum? No.
That's a good little tip to help the students remember that, say they don't have their papers. Who's telling them to revise? How are they going to remember that?
Good question. Good question. What do you think?
My teacher always told us that is means equal and of means time.
And that is true.
So then we'll have to think about it, really.
That is true. If you notice, you always, okay, there's one. What number is 20% of 50? If you look at the top one, that is multiplying. I should say what Ron said first. What he said is absolutely true, and I hadn't known that until I read it in this math book that I checked out of the library. Is means equals, and of means multiply. So in this thing, you're going to always, however that works. I'm not going to even try to go down there because I had thought about adding that to my notes and then I realized that I wasn't going to be able to keep it straight in my mind until I got done saying it. But if you look here, you have two different things you're doing. You're only multiplying on one, and that's the top one. When you're just trying to find what is 20% of a number or 10%, which is your easiest option. Your other two, you're dividing your part, the part, by what you have left. You either divide it by the percent or you divide it by the whole. And they're the same in that you divide the part by the other number that you have. But now I would never be able to keep that in my mind. I would tape this little paper to my desk and I would have it there. And hopefully as the years went by, it would get, this is just the way I think, this paper would get into my mind. And I would, then when I face these problems, I would just picture this paper in my mind. That's just me. Jody, I don't know if that helps you or not.
I thought of that. I remembered that then. But I just wanted to know the handle.
But you know,
go ahead. The fallacy of using of as time in your second problem, it says 35 of these students, so then they'll want times, and that's the wrong place to time.
You're right. You're right. And then if they weren't really reading the problem and they were just kind of skimming through it, and they would see that of, they would think, you know, here's my answer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and you know what? I told my students, I never taught them this because they didn't get that far in percentages. Maybe the first one, but not this. If they have a story problem with this particular stuff going on, then if it's not worked out beside the problem, then it is wrong. Period. Now, if they make a mistake and forget, you're not absolutely rigid, inflexible. But if they don't do the work on this, because remember, we're not trying to find the answer. We're teaching them the process. If they're not learning the process, they're not learning. They might have divided it by four. They might have the answer, but they did not learn what you're teaching them. So I think require them to show their work in something like this. I mean, if it's not there, it's wrong. I told them many times. Any more thoughts?
Once they've got to this concept, is there a case to have they memorized the fractions with their equivalent decimals?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She said, after they have mastered this, is there a place to have them memorize the decimals and the percentages and their equivalents? I say absolutely. Because actually real life values, that's probably one of the greatest, you know, to know that 25% is a quarter. And sometimes people don't know that. You're preparing them for life. So that, absolutely, I think that is one of the most important things you can do. But even after they know it, then I still make them write their problem out. That's just me. Yeah, that's true. That's right. But they need to know when it's not a quarter, when it's 27 instead of 25% that they, you're absolutely right. Any more thoughts?
To teach them to follow the process, then when they get to algebra, it's a whole lot easier to make the process work instead of just giving you the answer. Because you try to make it simple in algebra, so you follow the process. So if they don't follow the process, then they get lost in algebra.
You're exactly right. And you know what? You get lost in life later on too. Because it's teaching you how to think one step at a time and not skip and not, like you say, write the answer. That is a very good thought. This process, follow the process, because if we're teaching fourth and fifth or whatever you're teaching, I taught fourth and fifth, that's kind of my, the process maybe isn't as deadly important to, but it is later. And it's your job as a younger grade teacher to teach them the process before they have to get into. Okay, are there any more questions? I have a little talk here I was going to give, and we're not going to near get done with it. But I'm going to start, and I'll stop when the time is here to stop. I'm going to try very hard. I will stop. But I want to tell you, I have been teaching English in Bangladesh the last couple years, and Ruby taught over there too. I mean, some of you might have more experience there than I even know. And I learned some interesting things over there about witnessing to people in an Eastern culture that was different from witnessing to people here. And I know in Seattle and Portland there are huge communities of Bangladeshis and Pakistanis and all these kinds of people. And I want to give you a quick little, you know what, we're not even going to get a quarter of the way through this. I didn't think the percents would take very long, but you guys helped me out so much that we learned better than I thought. And I want to give you some tips on when you meet these people so you understand how they think, and can talk with them in a productive way. Before we go any farther, I'd like you to just think a little bit, and I'd like for you, and this goes for all witnessing to anybody, whether it's your brother who fell away, or it's your preacher who isn't living right, or it's the bum in Eugene. Let's imagine that you're walking down the road and you see in the ditch in front of you a carcass. And it's a body. And it's been there a long time. There's still just a little bit of life in it. You know, the heart is beating. There's some respiration. But it's gangrene. The legs are rotting. There's pus. There's swelling. It is revolting. And you look at it and your insides just turn. And you want to avoid it. Well, we see these bodies. We think we see them in people that are living. We see the old pervert in church who after 75 years of living has never been able to master his own. He's never given his own desires to God. And we look at him and we feel this just, oh, you. The truth is, we know that body. We know it really well because it is ourselves. We are worse than that. The only thing, today, the only difference between us and the pervert, between us and that body, is the fact that Jesus Christ has helped us go beyond that. And if we remember that, when you meet that old Muslim man over there who has five wives and who is truly an evil man, not near all Muslims are. I have some very good Muslim friends who are good people. And he's a pervert. He's wicked. And it's easy for you to think, you know what? the world would be better if he would be dead. You know what? He's one of those bodies, and we're no different without the power of Jesus. And if we can get that into our head, if we can remember that, no matter where we are, who we're witnessing to, we'll be able to show them love like Jesus does. Now, in the Eastern culture, there are three things that are very, very important, and it's really, really hard for you to ever witness to somebody and to make any headway without these three ingredients. And they are, the three things to do if you're witnessing to them, to show them the way. The first thing is respect. And the second thing is show them love. And the third thing that we must do to reach them is to show them Jesus and show them who Jesus is. And that's more important than showing them a lifestyle, because you know what? They actually already have a lifestyle. That's many times in their dress, their families, their is usually very close to on target. We need to show them Jesus, because Jesus is the difference, the only difference between you and a Muslim. We think very much it's the same. First thing is respect. And I'm going to go over this very quickly, because this is really, really important. Without respect, you will get nowhere with an Eastern person. Respect is such a part of their life, the fabric of their life. Respect for their elders, respect for their grandparents, if you're going to talk to an Eastern person, you're going to get anywhere with him, you're going to have to show him great respect. Now, he'll probably show you great respect too. That's part of it. You spend time, you listen, you care, you show them with every part of you respect. We'll just stop when the time comes. But that being said, an Eastern person doesn't necessarily respect his wives. He doesn't respect children. He doesn't respect a lot of things. And you have to show them, you know, that they're all God's creatures, and we all need to respect them too. In witnessing to people, I want to just inject this here before we go any farther, so that I won't make you. I'll just inject it here. Sometimes we feel like if we could go somewhere else, we could witness, maybe it would all work out there, and we could maybe save souls, and we forget to do it right here today. There was a hermit. No, there was a king many years ago. He was a great king, and he was a little bit like Solomon. He had just started being king, and he was a really good king, but he had questions. And his overriding question, he said, I'm one man, and I'm in a great country, and I have all these people, and how do I know where to invest my time, where to invest my energy, and he had three questions, and they were, who is the most important person, what is the most important time, and what is the most important thing to do? And he asked many people, and nobody, you know, could answer, because these are questions that are hard to. I mean, some people said, well, you know, whatever people say, the preachers are more important, the people with money are more important. The most important time is when you get up in the morning, because that's your first. And so, but he heard of this man high in the Himalayas. I think the story is from Pakistan, if I'm not mistaken. High in the Himalayas, that was wise. So he saddled up his horse. Oh, but this wise man didn't ever talk to wealthy people. If you came to him, you came to him as a poor man. So he saddled up his horse, took his courtiers with him, went up there to the foothills of the Himalayas, left them all down below, and he climbed up the mountain by himself. He arrived up there at the hermit's house, and the hermit was out there digging in his garden with a hoe. And he sat down on a rock by the hermit, and he asked him these questions. What is the most important time? Who is the most important person? What is the most important thing to do? And the hermit didn't say a word. He's kept digging in his garden. And the old man sat, and the king sat there for a while, and the hermit was old, and he was barely able to run the old hoe, and finally the king got up, and he took the hoe away from the hermit, and he hoed in the garden the rest of the day. And it got all said and done, and they ate a little supper together, and they laid down in the little hut there and went to sleep and woke up the next morning and kept on digging in the garden. And the king, he wanted to know, and he was willing to wait and try to find. Well, as the sun got hotter and they were resting underneath the tree for a little bit, all of a sudden this man came running into the clearing, and he was holding both his hands on his side, and blood is trickling out from between his fingers. And he comes running up, and he falls down right in front of the king and the hermit, and he passes out. And so the hermit wasn't very strong, but him and the king together pulled the man into the hut. And the king was a king, and so he had been trained in war and fighting and fixing and people that are chopped up. And he pried that man's fingers off, and he cleaned out that big sword. It was a sword wound in his side. Cleaned it all out and put a bandage on it, and helped fix it. Well, a little bit later, the man's eyes opened up, and the first thing he saw, he was laying there on the floor, and the first thing he saw was the king's face right above him. And he said, "Oh, you're the king." He said, "I came up here to kill you because you, with one of your laws, made so my brother was killed. And I hated you, and I came up here to kill you. And I was waiting at the foot of the mountain among the trees all day for you to come down, but you never came down. You stayed up here. And so finally I decided to sneak up. Well, one of your soldiers saw me, and I was able to get away, but he stabbed me before I was able to get away." And the king was like, "Oh, that's terrible." And he didn't know what to say. But the man said, "But I see that you're not that kind of person. You're a good man. You saved my life. And because of that, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I want to be your servant for the rest of my life." And the hermit said, "You've learned your lesson," to the king. And the king turned his head and was like, "Why, you know?" He said, "Because," he said, "yesterday when you came up on the mountain, you saw me digging and I was having trouble and sweating, and you took my hoe and you hoed for me. And I was the most important person in your life. And the most important thing to do was to hoe my garden." And he said, "This morning, when this man came up here all wounded," he said, "he was the most important person in your life. And the most important thing to do was to heal his wound. And the most important time is always now. And when you're dealing with anybody, this is the truth I want you to know. The most important person is the person who is in front of you. And the most important thing to do is to do them good. And the most important time is always now. And whether that means you're in a classroom situation that is truly your worst nightmare, or a relationship that is, or the best thing that ever happened to you, now is the time. The person is the one in front of you, and the thing to do is to do them good." So with that in our minds, you know what? I'll tell you one more little story, and then we'll stop. Something that happened to me, and it's in the love section here. So I was walking, me and my brother were walking down the streets of Kolkata in India. And now in Kolkata, it's one of the world's largest child slave trades. Every year, I have no idea the numbers, hundreds of thousands of children are trafficked out of Kolkata and surrounding places in India for their organs, for organ transplants, for cheap organs if you need them. Just keep that in mind. And for slaves. And so we're walking along the streets of Kolkata here, and we're Americans, and we're, you know, kind of above that. We don't even see this stuff happening. Well, we did. But that's beside the point. We were walking along, and this man comes up to us. And he was a child dealer. And he thought maybe me and my brother would be interested in some of his wares. And we turned on him in righteous indignation, and we told him how wicked he was, and how that the business he was in was had to be the most wicked, the wickedest business in the whole world, and what he was doing to these children and to these, it was the blackest. His soul was just pure black. And then he left, right? He realized he wasn't going to be able to make a deal work out. And we were there kind of with clenched fists in the middle of the sidewalk thinking of, well, you know, we told him the truth and we told him, you know, where right is. And now he knows that what he's doing is sin. And then I got to thinking about it. Over the thousands of miles, God had moved me and my brother and this wicked man to meet together on the streets of Kolkata. And now, usually when somebody's in that kind of a business, they probably started off as the child. Very often that's the case. And he probably has memories today, memories of things that I can't even imagine in my worst nightmares. And he came to me with, I'm sure, I know others of his kind. He came to me with that in his past. He had no illusions of the darkness that was inside of him and the pain there and his memories and the nights. He knew that. And he came to me and Willie. We met at the hand of God, and instead of showing him Jesus or showing him love or saying you don't have to be that way, we told him one more time how evil he was. And I think as Mennonites, I speak for myself, that is my weakness. You know, we're godly people, and it's easy sometimes to tell the people we see, you dirty drunk, you wicked man, you pervert in the church, you old, whoever you're, and you know, that's really not our message. You know, Jesus gave that message to people, but he always gave it to religious people who were being wicked, but they were doing it under the cloak of being religious. Our message to these people is not to tell them one more time, like we did to that pimp in Kolkata, that you're going to hell. It's to tell them that there's another way, and there's another way to live, and a better way, and there's forgiveness, and there's hope, and there's a future. We have a few more moments here. Didn't promise to stop until 12. Another thing that I want to tell you is when you're witnessing to these people, whether it's here in Halsey, whether it's in Bangladesh, wherever you find yourself, or whether it's your students, you know, your students are your mission field. Don't ever forget that. You don't try to get them to find the Lord in your classroom. But you want them to know the Lord, and you want them to know that's your goal. And if you fail on that, you failed on everything. And so, in Bangladesh, I'll give you this little illustration, and then make my point. So, one time I have Hindus and Muslims in my classroom, and we give them little Bible story books at the end of the year as their present, and they really like them. But there's a different there's language variations between Hindu Bangla and Muslim Bangla. So I had one little girl that I wasn't sure if she was a Hindu or a Muslim. I wanted to give her the right book, so I asked her. Kind of in the middle of class, I thought I could, you know, do it quietly, but you know, nothing teachers can do is quiet. It seems everybody's watching. And I asked her, she said, are you a Hindu or are you a Muslim? And she said, well, she's a Hindu. Oh, I thought she was, but I didn't know. I couldn't tell by her last name. And then a little bit later, she raised her hand and says, no, actually, she's a Christian. And everyone in the classroom, in about the next 10 seconds, raised their hands and said, actually, we're all Christians. We're Christians. Because we like you. And, you know, they weren't Christians. They had no idea what they were talking about. that approach is not our, it's not our job. People can convert and can give a sinner's prayer, and that's not Christianity. That's not becoming Christian. Our job is to show them Jesus, to show them how to live, and to show them how to live holy, that they don't have to be a slave to their past, to their sin, to their, that's Christianity. And if we can show them that, we will show them Jesus, and we'll meet them in heaven, and that'll be really, really cool. Okay, you are dismissed. Our time is up. Thank you so much for coming. You are a wonderful, wonderful interactive class. Good job.